Hi, and welcome to Fresh Out of Tokens. We don't have an episode number for this one. It is a special episode where we get a chance to focus on one game and one developer. So we're going to get a chance to talk to Charles Webb about Mafia 3. So hi, Charles, and thank you so much for joining me today.
Hi, Tanya. Thanks for having me.
Oh, I'm super excited. I'm glad we got a chance to talk because I've been hyped for Mafia 3 since I saw the first trailers. So I apologize in advance if I fangirl out a little bit.
No, that's a very exciting and fun reaction. We're happy to have that.
Yay! So for those listening, just our usual spiel, and then Charles and I can get right into the conversation. So for those of you listening, we have teas and other items in the I Need Diverse Games spreadsheet shop. If you want to go rep our show out in the office or out in the world as you listen to us, we split the profits 50-50 with our friend Chachi Bobings, who designed our logo and header. And we have a blog to compliment the show, which is outoftokenscast.com. If you have questions, compliments, guest feedback, episode feedback, want to be a guest, drop us a line at freshoutoftokens@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at outoftokenscast. Our musical accompaniment normally is provided by Mike Moody, and you can hear more of her work at soundcloud.com/MikeMoody-1. And with that, I followed your work, Charles, now since I learned about the game. But I was wondering, for those that don't know you, could you tell folks who you are and, you know, what you do, kind of your history, and then what you do specifically on Mafia 3?
Sure. Well, I guess starting at the end and working my way back. Senior writer on Mafia 3 for Hangar 13 Games. Been here with the company for 2 years now. Have had an exciting, winding path through game development over the last 11 years, this last month. Got my start in mobile games, writing for narrative-focused, branching dialogue games. Jumped over to games journalism for a little while and covered film and television as well, and got back into games a couple years ago. And that's kind of my story in a nutshell. And if anyone asks what kind of educational requirements you have for all that, a psych major that you don't use along with a sociology minor.
I feel that pain because my degree is gathering dust right now. Oh, I know. And it's like I've got a tech degree and I'm still not using it. So I feel your pain on that. So, you know, obviously now you've come to work on this game and it's a landmark game, but kind of what got you into being a gamer or working in the industry itself, aside from the tidbit you just gave us?
Well, you know, I've known that I wanted to write since I was, I don't know, like 10. And everything has just kind of led to that point, you know, hustling and hassling for different types of writing gigs over the years, and some of them worked out with various levels of success, but, you know, this small company was looking for writers in New York, and they were looking for a diverse crew of writers. So it was, you know, people from diverse backgrounds, not only just in terms of like their race, ethnicity, but also sexuality, and in terms of educational background. You know, we had playwrights, we had filmmakers, over again these somewhat strange branching dialogue mobile games that, you know, hardly anyone got a chance to play, but we were deeply, deeply proud of. And, you know, I was just fortunate enough to have a team that was excited enough to take a chance on me and let me do my thing for a couple of years for very strange and interesting projects. And, you know, once you get a taste of something like that, you just want to keep doing it. And that's what's kept me in it. That's what's kept me talking about games over the last few years. That's what's kept me writing about games and writing for games over the last few years. It's just this interesting space where I can tell stories in a way that you could not in traditional media. And, you know, that kind of gets me up to Mafia 3, where we get to have an even broader canvas and a bigger audience to say something and to do something interesting with that.
Cool, because, you know, it's open world, and I get to go be a black dude and take revenge on the Mafia. I was sold. And, you know, you're a writer, and this just cracks me up, and this is just more my one curious thing to know. You have senior black writer in your Twitter bio. Is that like your actual Mafia 3 at Hangar 13 title, or is there a story behind it?
I have not asked if I can put that on my business cards, but I secretly like to think that they would let me. No, it's just, you know, acknowledging what the content of this game is and what kind of story we're telling. Initially I thought, it would be kind of funny if I identified myself as senior black writer, but you know, over time, knowing who I am and knowing, you know, what kind of face I'm potentially putting out there for the game and other people who might have ambitions to write for or work for games, I kind of want to be visible. I want to be as visible as possible. Because I didn't have that initially. Like, I did not know that, one, writing was a thing that people did on games, and I know a lot of people still don't really know that. Two, you know, you don't see a lot of people of color out front talking about games and talking about game development or what their roles are in it. And, you know, in my own way, I just kind of want to offer that. You know, hey, this is me. I do this. You too can do it. I can't possibly explain 100% how, but it's a thing that can be done. And if a weirdo like myself can do it, you can too.
Yeah, because I think you and Toya Finley are probably the only, you know, people, black people writing games right now that I could name off the top of my head.
Yeah, and that's the struggle. Like, there are probably plenty of other folks. It's just we, you know, it's not super visible. And just the way the game development works and these large, wonderful, sprawling teams, you know, you can't quite pick out, like, tons of developers of color, but you know we're out there. And mm-hmm. it's always great to kind of see other folks and be able to acknowledge them, say, I see you out there.
Yeah, going to the Black Sig at GDC this year, it was just like, my people, I found you.
Absolutely.
So we already talked a little bit about how you got involved with Mafia 3 and Hangar 13. So one of the other things I want to know is, how much of you is in Lincoln and how he's written?
You know, I thought a lot about that kind of question in general, you know. How much of ourselves do we put in characters, particularly like Lincoln Clay? And that's always a scary one to answer, because Lincoln's a scary dude. And at the same time, we've tried very hard to make him human. You know, myself, Bill Harms, our lead writer, Ed Fowler, the other senior writer on the game, one of the things we've worked really, really hard to do is make him an identifiable character. Maybe not necessarily one that you think is always a good guy, but one that feels human. And I think the thing that I've latched onto, the thing that makes him identifiable with me, is the fact that he is deeply committed to his family. You know, more than anything else, that's the most important thing in my entire life, and I know that's the most important thing in Lincoln's entire life. And you kind of chart the opening act of the story. He's willing to do whatever he can to protect Sammy and Ellis and get them out from under trouble with the Marcanos. And when that all goes sideways, when, you know, Sal screws them over, he's going to do whatever he can to make it right. You know, mm-hmm. he's going to do whatever it is to, and you know, that's I think a relatable and real feeling. So whenever we're writing anything involving Lincoln's kind of path to vengeance, you think about that. How am I going to react if somebody does something bad to my family? What are the worst angels, you know, on my shoulder going to tell me to do if something bad happens to the ones that I care about?
Huh. That's interesting, because I'm thinking about when he, you know, the times when he's with the pastor, and they have those kind of very revealing conversations. He's like, you know, this is kind of path you're going down. And he's like, well, yeah, I know it. Like, there's no shame in what he's doing. He's like, this is where I'm at right now. So, hey.
Well, we wanted to be very clear, you know, using Father James as kind of a sounding board for that. But hey, Lincoln, you're going to be doing some nasty, nasty stuff. Understand what this is going to cost you. Understand what this is going to cost your soul. Understand what this is going to cost the city. And I think kind of one of the things that we've done really well with the game is extrapolate that and show what the impact of Lincoln's actions are over the course of those 25 hours of the game. You know, there's a cost to this. You're not just running around and causing a bunch of mayhem. You're causing a bunch of mayhem in a city of living people who are going to react to a black dude running around with a gun shooting mm-hmm. stuff up.
Oh, yeah, because I was thinking specifically of when the two vets get shot because of what Lincoln's been doing. And it's just like, huh, that's interesting that now there's a repercussion. He has to go back out on his plan of vengeance and have that in the back of his head going, real people are suffering for the things I'm doing, and he doesn't stop. So,
yeah, it's been kind of great. I think I credit support of the rest of the team to having this sense of, what does this mean? How can we extrapolate what Lincoln is doing here in terms of like how the city is going to react? So everything from the way your underbosses react to you to, you know, stuff like the McCall and Harris shooting, like those two guys. And Lincoln could have been one of those guys very, very easily. And we see what his actions, what him taking things all the way to 11 is gonna do to the city.
Mm-hmm. Well, knowing that and knowing the consequences of what happens with Lincoln, you know, the crux of a lot of the things I've been reading and what I've written is how the game does not flinch away from racism. So I was wondering, how hard was it for you and the team to kind of have to push for that to be such a forefront part of the game and how Lincoln interacts with the world and how the world kind of reacts to him?
You know, I'll say I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, for the most part, the team has very much leaned into the idea of exploring what racism means in this space and showing what it looks like in New Bordeaux in our version of New Orleans in 1968 and having that veracity. It was really just a matter of how can we show it? How can we communicate it most clearly while still existing in this space where people want to play the game, where we don't flinch away from it, but we also don't create an experience that is entirely punishing for the player. And I think that was the real difficulty. You know, it was tuning that. It was, you know, using play tests and user tests to get a sense of, well, this feels right. You know, this is, for lack of a better term, this is the right amount of racism for the game that allows you to experience the city and want to wander around in it while still creating that kind of emotional sting. And a lot of that just involved, you know, conversations with the designers and constantly tweaking dialogue and tweaking missions and really refining that stuff. I think that was a real difficulty there, finding that sweet spot. And, you know, it's a really, really difficult thing to do. But you kind of have to just keep hitting at it over and over and over again and refining that vision and saying, all right, this feels like a space where I have an emotional reaction to this stuff. And this feels like a case where I'm going to have a visceral reaction to this random pedestrian and how am I going to react to that? Or I'm going to have a visceral reaction to these mob guys saying some fucked up stuff. Excuse my language.
Oh no, you can cuss. Feel free.
Okay, good. Yeah. Thank you. You know, to having these racial epithets kind of flung at you this way and that, or not even at you, just generally used, like the word nigger uses a comma in a sentence for some of these guys. There's kind of like gameplay impact to that kind of thing. You know, you're stealthing through a mission and you hear something gnarly around the corner, like, well, I'm going to kill that guy. Well, that's going to screw up your stealth. But at the same time, you have that reaction and you want to react to it in some way. Or do you role play as Lincoln and you just keep going and you keep doing your thing? It's, I don't know. It was kind of an exciting opportunity as well as a scary challenge.
Well, I think the gamble paid off.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
If I can poke you about one thing, like,
sure.
What was generally your reaction whenever you encountered any racism in the game?
I knew it was coming because, you know, like I'd watched the videos and everything else on that. I intellectually knew this was coming when I started this game, but the anger that bubbled up and the unbridled joy of punching a white dude who had just told me to bow down to my white masters, I cackled and I was like, that felt kind of good. Not that I'm gonna go out in real life and start punching people in the face, because thankfully people don't say that, at least to your face. They say it online, but they haven't said it to my face yet. It was hard though. Like, it took an emotional toll. Like, I found I could stream it in chunks and then I had to put it down and then I came back to it the next day, because with the exception of some travel, I've been playing and streaming it every day since I got it. And that anger on behalf of Lincoln and all the things that I've experienced in my life, coupled with the usual joys of being a black person on Twitch and streaming a game like Mafia 3, just gave me a very visceral, I felt vindicated when I got to, like, take out mob bosses and punch dudes on the street for being racist assholes to me. And it was a good feeling. And I know that may sound vindictive and terrible to some people when they hear this, but, you know, I'm also a black person living in the U.S. watching people get gunned down by cops every other day. And this game is set just 5 years before I was born. I know my mom lived through this stuff. And I remember, you know, the stuff they're talking about with Star Trek and the riots in Chicago. This is not ancient history. So it was a very visceral reaction to it, and it built, and it built as I play, but it was also very rewarding to start taking things back from the mob and the and the Marcanos.
You know, what you described there is this this journey and this kind of challenge for us as developers of making sure that we're offering an experience that felt authentic but didn't feel traumatizing to the player. I think that's maybe the word that I was searching for before. You know, we want you to experience that visceral racism of the period. We want to offer you that catharsis, but at the same time, we don't want to offer a thing where it feels like, oh God, I got to play more of this game, because that, I think that's the worst possible end of it. That's maybe the worst possible outcome. And I think we worked really, really hard to tune that stuff so that it felt like it was a space that was hostile to Lincoln and a space that was hostile to the player, but not overwhelming. Not, you know, you want to get back in there and you want to go at the Marcanos really hard. You want to go at the Dixie Mafia and the Southern Union really, really hard. And we offer the catharsis at the end of that experience.
Oh, you, at least in my case, you delivered.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, because, you know, like, I live in Chicago, and, you know, there's that added layer of people think they're cute, and they call Chicago Chirac, and, you know, I wake up and see someone else's name as a hashtag, and then turning on this game and having that catharsis, but also knowing I've been called a nigger in my lifetime. I've seen the way people react. I've had people clutch a purse while I sit next to them on the bus, and this is, you know, quote unquote modern times versus the 60s that Lincoln is in. So it's not that far removed, and I never felt overwhelmed, like, this is too emotionally rough, I can't play the game anymore ever. It was, okay, I've got my stuff done for the day, I'm gonna go be Lincoln for a few hours. So, you know, for me, and that's why I want, and that's why I made sure to thank you all in my piece about it, because I've never had that experience. You know, in all the games that I've played, I'm a big RPG player, I love open world games, but there's never been that visceral, that payoff for the emotional trauma that you sometimes get in games. And that has been deeply relevant for me.
Well, I really appreciate that. You know, it's something I'm very proud of our team for leaping into, you know, letting players occupy Lincoln's headspace for a couple of dozen hours and be this very specific person in this very specific period of time, and hopefully not shying away from that story, hopefully leaning into it as much as we can and you know, being authentic to it, honoring the history as nasty and messed up as it was.
Yeah, and that's the part that really bugged me with, you know, reviewers just feeling like the race part of it was shoved down their throats, and I'm like, well, you know, black players gotta live with this shit every day, so suck it up for 30 hours, you'll deal.
You know, the reviews part, piece aside, you know, there seems to be a very, very positive response to the game. You know, we've had a very, very successful launch. We've found a lot of folks are just really, really embracing Lincoln and embracing Mafia 3, so I don't know. I don't know what to say. And at the same time, I don't want to discount the experiences of some reviewers who they may not have actually experienced racism, or they understand it as a secondhand thing. Mm-hmm. Or, and I'm not going to paint it as a white and black thing. There may be black reviewers who feel like, hey, this was too much. This was difficult. I'm not going to tar those experiences as invalid. But again, we tried to create something that was specific. We tried to create something that was specific and authentic, and I think a lot of people are kind of, they're very clearly responding to that, and they're really grasping onto it, and a lot of people are very enthusiastic about it, in the way that you were, where it's the lived experience, not just themselves, but of, you know, their mothers and their fathers or their grandparents, and it's not too many generations removed, and there's still so much going on today, and you get this sense of, all right, I get to wait in this space, and I get to live through this story, and I get to make an impact, and I may not end racism, but I get to, you know, mess with some racists.
Right. And that's so satisfying to watch them, like, just freak out and run around once you start sniping people. It's amazing. you know, before we get too deep, because we could probably sit here and talk about this for hours, and I won't be respectful of your time.
I appreciate that.
No problem. But I was wondering, you know, now the Mafia's out there, and it's been very blatant about addressing race with the opening statement and the ways in which Lincoln goes about the world, do you think other games will actually start to fully address this issue rather than kind of halfway, sort of, kind of, it's in there, but, you know, it's an allegory, or we mention it, but it's up to the player, kind of throw your hands up and say, hey, we did a thing.
I mean, I hope so. You know, who knows what future holds? You know, there are other studios out there that may be looking at what we've done with Mafia 3. There are other studios out there that have been churning along with their own things that, you know, maybe dealing with a specific period of time and dealing with not just racism, but also, you know, gender inequality and LGBT rights. And they're out there probably pumping out like a rad game that'll be out in a couple of years, but you just can't tell because the development process is long and winding, and any impact that we may potentially or may not have had, we're not going to see for a couple of years. But I hope so. I hope there are studios out there trying to tackle this stuff because, you know, obviously there's an audience for it. Obviously people are clamoring for stories that are about them and are about their lived experiences. So, you know, don't shy away from it. Don't be afraid to take a side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's hard. I actually gave a talk at ArenaNet, and that was one thing that kind of kept coming back of, what if I screw up, or, you know, what about this situation? And I was just like, there's no such thing as perfect representation. Because like you said, you could have five black people in a room, we've all played this game, and have very different reactions. Yeah. So I think as long as people get away from the idea of a perfect representation or perfect solution to these issues and doing them justice in the game, you can do it well, but it's not about perfection. So hopefully that comes up.
Maybe there's that it's hard to say, you know, with like big budget, you know, AAA development, but sometimes you got to be unafraid of failing, like just falling flat in your face. And I think we've avoided that, thank God. But, you know, if we had failed, we tried something. And I think there's something way more interesting and more impactful about those beautiful failures, those attempts to tell a story. And it may not necessarily land, but you attempted it, and you asked questions, and you interrogated history, you interrogated stories, and you tried to find ways to reflect the reality around you, as opposed to, like you said, sidestepping it or using allegory to tell the story. Actually just seeing something, maybe you're going to find people who are going to grab onto that, and they're going to want to embrace that story, and they're going to share it with the people that they know. And again, it's kind of hard to say, do this, because I think we've done it well enough, and it's resonated with a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of look at things that just didn't do as well, and they hang in your mind for years and years. I guess just don't be afraid of screwing up. Don't be afraid of disappointing folks, because you've got an opportunity to learn from. You've got an opportunity to grow from it and build on it.
Yeah, definitely. There's one mission, and if you either don't want to talk about it or have talked about it at length at some other point that I have not seen, we can move on or just kind of resolve it quickly. But, you know, I'm a black queer person, and this is one mission that just it stuck with me. So I wanted to ask you about the blackmail mission, where you have to go find the folder and take it to the guy hiding in the parking garage. I was just wondering, of all the things that it could have been blackmail about, was there a specific reason, or was there any intent about making about gay, like, this dude is gay, he's making movies, that's the blackmail?
Well, in this specific case, one of the things we wanted to reflect was the shameful history of gay folks in New Orleans during that period. I don't know if you've ever heard of the Upstairs Lounge fire. Around 1973, like nearly three dozen gay folks were killed at this gathering at this Upstairs Lounge, which was kind of a known hangout for gay men in the city. The most notable thing about this, and the story was found by Ed Fowler, the other senior writer on our team. The most shameful and painful part of that story was that the majority of the bodies were not claimed by those family members because gayness as a thing was so shameful, and it was this you know, supposed painful stain on these families, and they weren't gonna acknowledge their family members. And I think being able to reflect that in our game, to show something that is, you know, all things considered, just agnostic behavior, just two dudes having sex, that's not an objectionable thing to anyone in the entire world. It being positioned by someone else, someone in quote unquote power, is this shameful and bad thing. Being able to have that in there is a visceral moment. I don't know, it was important. And I, you know, unfortunately, I would love to have told more stories about, you know, queer representation in the game. And I think we had a great opportunity with that. We expect people to be listening to this after having played some of the game, correct?
Yes.
Yeah. I think one of the things we could be very, very proud of is Nikki's story and using Nikki Burke as kind of the flip side of that sort of story, of being able to love who you want to love, to be unabashedly queer in the face of a family who may not necessarily love you back or love you the right way. It was kind of an unintentional echo. It was kind of an unintentional mirror between those two things, you know, this blackmail mission where you can say, oh, this is an objectionable thing, or, oh, this is just, it's a thing that is happening and someone is going to try to use it to their advantage, versus Nikki's story where it's, you know, Lincoln saying at the end of that to Nikki, you know, just love who you're going to love. You know, you have so very little in this life. Just love who you're going to love, and that's going to be fine. So I don't, that maybe is a very winding, roundabout answer to all of that, but, you know.
No, that's fine, because I did not know that, because unfortunately, you know, I don't know a lot about queer history, so something, if I'd known that, it probably wouldn't have been that way it did to me. So that's, you know, it. I like that the echo was unintentional, but that it's there. And I will think about that as I replay the game and look that up before I play again. We already kind of talked about reviews and things like that. So I just had a couple more questions before you get a chance to turn it back on me if you have any other questions for me as someone who's played the game. So I was wondering, you know, since you kind of set this precedent with Mafia 3 of dealing with racism, will that kind of thread through either future DLC or even just future Mafia games, if you can speculate or just say, hey, that can't talk about it, that's cool too?
Well, I can talk to DLC. We've actually, I don't know if you saw the announcement that we had around PAX, this year's PAX, of our three upcoming DLC installments. And one of them, Bastard Baby, is unabashedly confronting and looking at race. Tonally, it's going to be a little bit of a shift from what's in the main game, but, you know, it's yet again another opportunity to kind of put Lincoln squarely in a story that is about race and about blackness and you know, taking it to white supremacy. So it's not something that we're shying away from. I think it's something we're very, very proud of. It's something we're leaning into. We want to explore more in our storytelling.
Oh, that's so cool. So I have the collector's edition, so I'm going to be sitting there going, okay, when can I get this DLC?
Nice.
You'll get a DM going, oh my God, what did you do?
And I hope you like it.
Well, you are always welcome to come and chat with us about this stuff, because, like, it's just so chill to sit and chat with you.
Thank you. I'm enjoying it myself, and it's also exciting to kind of dig into some of these questions about the game. And keep in mind, you know, what you're asking now, it's a lot of stuff that we ask internally, and we try to investigate, we try to interrogate what we've done and how we feel about it and what we did well and what we would like to improve upon in the future. So being able to talk to other folks about it who really responded positively to the game, or even responded negatively to the game, you know, understand what those experiences were coming from, it's rewarding and to a certain extent.
Oh, cool. So, you know, being a black person online or just existing, we cannot escape discussions of race, whether we want them or not. But especially, you know, now that we're looking at gaming and people are actually thinking about these issues, do you find the conversations we're currently having about race and racism in gaming, both as a developer, as someone who plays them and makes them, and, you know, having been part of Mafia 3, do you find it tiring? Do you think we'll ever kind of get out of this rut of, oh my God, why do you keep pushing this agenda? Or will we be able to actually have conversations like adults at some point about this topic?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. You know, as far as it being tiring, the exhaustion is real with having kind of defend the position that, you know, representation matters and having more than just kind of the default type of character in games is not only rewarding, but also an opportunity to tell different types of stories. But I'm going to keep at it. And I know a lot of other folks are raring to keep at it. I know our team is very dedicated to what we've done with Link and Clay and the story that we've told. So that means that there's an appetite out there to pursue it. And that means that there is a willingness and motivation to pursue this kind of storytelling. As far as being tired, sometimes you just have to walk away from it. You just have to kind of take a break. Get off of Twitter on Saturdays and Sundays and go engage with folks you love and go hug people who are real to you and walk away from this nonsense. Because there are people who are always going to just kind of leap into the fray and want to have, you know, quote-unquote opinions, which are really just a chance to antagonize someone who has a lived experience. There's not really a lot to be done for it. You just keep soldiering on and you keep up the criticism and you keep up the observation and you keep supporting the stuff that's good. I think that's the most important part. Like, pimp really good stuff. Find it, talk about it, share it with the people that you love and the people that you don't know. And I think that's one of the main ways that we'll be able to kind of move this conversation forward. You know, it's not just a matter of saying, hey, these things have to be good, but also sharing the stuff that is good. You know, sharing the stuff that does mirror your experience or echoes the kind of stuff that you want to see in games. It's not a perfect fix. There are all sorts of systemic things that need work, but I think that's one start.
Definitely. And, you know, and I always get angry with the whole go make your own. Then when you do make your own, people still don't like it. So it's like a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
I think make your own is maybe one of the more dismissive, is maybe one of the more dismissive responses to things. Like, okay, cool. I can't wait for you to give me the $5 million, $10 million, however much to make a massive video game that, you know, that costs way more than that to develop. And I'm super stoked for you to pay my salary so I don't have to work so I can make this passion project. And it's, you know, as someone who's like in between game jobs, work on other stuff and made his own, like, it's sometimes rewarding work, but it's also sometimes very, very exhausting work. And, you know, it's not as easy as one can say. And I think that's usually kind of said from the perch of having the backing of a major studio behind someone, having the backing of a major publisher behind them to be able to just say, make your own. That's cool. You've made your own. I guess you can
you're like, good, go you. So, you know, just two more quick questions and then we can kind of chat about what we've been playing, if you've had any free time to play games.
Oh God, no.
and then you can grill me all you like, because sure. I don't know if you have questions for me. So we're finally getting more black male leads specifically. So, you know, we've got Lincoln, I can't think of the dude in Watch Dogs 2.
I'm sure, I can't remember his last name right offhand.
Yeah, but we finally get that. And considering Watch Dogs 1, that's like, you know, the other side of the world, that they got a black dude this time. Do you think that that's like kind of a turning point, that we'll finally see it and it won't be such a controversial thing finally?
You know, kind of with the question earlier about, you know, confronting race and, you know, issues of representation in games, I don't know. I think we're just at a moment where weirdly this all kind of happened at the same time. But the optimistic part of me thinks and hopes that, you know, a lot of publishers are looking at the video game landscape and they're looking at other pop culture. You know, the Fast and Furious series is one of the biggest things in the entire world right now because it's unabashedly featuring, you know, people of color out front doing crazy shit. So why not do that in other media? Why not try that in games? And it just seems to be landing now. And I hope that is a thing that just keeps happening. And I hope it's not just black dudes. I hope it's, you know, other people of color, it's other marginalized groups just showing out up front, you know, without any sort of preamble, without any sort of over explaining why that is the case, and just saying, hey, this is our character and they're bad and you're going to love them and you're going to really, really enjoy inhabiting this experience. And oh yeah, also it's a queer lady and she's, you know, we're going to get to actually live her experience. That's, I don't know. It's a thing that I hope for in my most optimistic mind.
I'll take it, because I would like to, have a little bit more color on my gaming shelf. So, you know, aside from the DLC that's been announced and being senior black writer, I'm going to make you one card that just says that, and I'm going to send it to you.
I appreciate it.
What's next that obviously stuff you can talk about, either professional, personal, anything you want to share that's kind of coming up for you?
You know, it's strictly just focusing on DLC right now. That's kind of where all of my time lives. I mainly have personal time. It's not just because of work. We've talked a little bit on Twitter, and I've got a new kid. So that's where my life is right now.
Gotcha.
I leave here and I go home to hug a baby.
Aw, a baby.
Yes. So it's, we were going to talk about like what's happening with gaming right now. Like very little, very, very, very little. Those little things, they respond very much to noise. So it's hard to play Overwatch or even our own game in the house without wearing a pair of headphones or something, and that's a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I can imagine, because you have to always kind of be on the alert for the small human needing yes, stuff.
Very much so.
Okay, so I've been playing Mafia 3, Civ 6, and Skyrim, so when I'm like away and have my laptop, no one's going to talk to me, because I will have Civ 6 and Skyrim.
You're living right. You're living right now. Enjoy this time without, a little human eating up all of your time.
Well, that ship has sailed for me. There will never be a small human in this house. But there's an old aging cat that apparently does not realize he's not a small human. Who always wants my attention the minute I put on headphones. I can be here all day, and he's just like, I'm asleep. Oh, you're doing something. Now I'm going to come bother you.
I absolutely understand the struggle.
So before we kind of talk about where folks can find you online and other stuff, do you have any other questions for me? Since we normally do listener questions, but this is kind of a special one-off episode and we don't have listener questions. It's just us. So feel free to throw some stuff at me.
Well, I just have the one, and it's kind of, I think, following from a lot of what we talked about here, but you know, as a queer lady of color, like, what is it that you're looking for in games in the future? You know, it's always good to clearly hear that articulated by someone, like what they want the future of games to look like.
I would like to have I like to have more characters of color, not have it be this, oh my god, the first female black whatever, or female queer person of color in X franchise, and have it be this thing, and you know, people getting a lot of credit for kind of doing the minimum. I would like to have queer characters that survive and not be fridged. I would love to have the magical Negro trope die a fast, hard, fiery death. I want to exist in these pixelated landscapes that I spend hundreds of hours in and not feel like a joke. And my biggest peeve, and this is across all games, is stop giving non-human characters black hairstyles.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm a big Dragon Age nerd. I'm a BioWare nerd. It's N7 days we record this. And, you know, I've bought 3 copies of Dragon Age Inquisition, and I can only mod the PC version to have hair that is not like a short fade or an afro. You know, consult with black folks. We have different hair. I would like to have something beside a high top fade in a video game. So, I mean, aside from it, you know, existing, I would like to have, you know, options that are more reflective of all the different shades of brown we come in. Make dark skinned people who don't disappear in shitty lighting in your game. And get out of fucking Europe. There's plenty of other stories to tell.
I hear nothing there that sounds crazy.
Good. Yay, I'm validated. This makes me happy. So thank you, Charles. This has been wonderful, and I'm so glad you took part of your day to sit and chat with me. And I contained my fangirling to a bit. I will send you DMs and squeal at you later. So for folks who do kind of want to either maybe thank you for the game, talk about the game, what are appropriate ways for people to reach you online?
At the Charles Webb on Twitter. I'm very, very easy to find. Talk to me about movies and stuff. I've lived Mafia 3 for a good little minute.
Okay.
Tell me about some stuff that you like as well. Hit me to things that I should be able to watch when I'm not holding a baby.
Okay. So
also, ping me about the game. Tell me the stuff that you liked, and let's talk about it, because I'm really, really proud of the couple of years that I've put into this game, and that this massive, dedicated team has put into this game. And at Hangar 13 Games, let them know as well what you've liked about it, and just share that experience, because it's been great. I know I'm kind of verging and inarticulate here, because it's a lot of feeling and emotion that we've all dumped into this project over the last couple of years, and seeing people respond to it so positively, and seeing people respond to it with such big emotion, has been, one of the professional highlights for me.
I don't blame you for getting emotional. There have been times where it's just like, when I stream it or when I talk about it, I have that moment where I'm like, I'm either going to be real angry, I'm going to cry, or both. And it's not a bad thing. It's just that is how much the game has touched me. And, thank you. Please pass thanks on to the team, everyone who's like commented. And then we're recording this right before the special Spawn on Me episode drops. And my folks will get to listen to it later in the week. But thank you. Thank you for the game. Thank you for existing. Thank you for being in the industry and visible. And thank you again for just being really fucking awesome and talking with me for almost an hour about this game that I've nagged the fuck out of everyone about. And a big thanks to my benefactor who wants to remain anonymous, who sent me the money to get the collector's edition after I kind of lamented over wanting it, but not being able at that point to drop that kind of money. And the next thing I know, I had a PayPal notification. So
that's beautiful. All right.
Yeah. So it's sitting behind me. I've got the art book, and that's going to be my flight reading when I go to New York in a couple days. So thank you again. Please thank Brian. I know he's nearby. And that is it for us. And we'll, Fresh Out of Tokens, we'll talk to you later in the year, probably after Thanksgiving, because the holidays mean travel and turkey and not being behind a mic for a couple weeks in a row. So with that, thanks a lot, and we will resume our regular schedule at some point, but enjoy the special episode with Charles Webb. If you have feedback, want to ping Charles or me on Twitter about the episode, I'm Cypher of Tears always, or ping the show at Out of Tokens Cast. Okay.